This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Please take care of yourself.
Fruit Loops, episode 230, Buiti Binafi, and Bienvenidos Bitches.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and those who are othered and the victims, because contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are straight cisgender white dudes.
What?
Yeah, these crimes rarely get any public attention. And that is because the news is racist. Allegedly.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy, a Black Latinx woman. And I'm Beth, and I just happen to be white.
Hey, y'all. It's just wanting to put that out there because it informs our experience, our perspectives, and our understanding.
And it's just part of who we are.
Exactly.
Yep. But we're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists.
Absolutely.
Just a couple of gals interested in true crime.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions.
All right, so who are we talking about today, Beth?
Today, we're talking about Willie Corey Godbolt, a Black man who in 2017 went on a house-to-house shooting spree in rural Mississippi, killing 8 people.
Mm.
And this story was suggested to us by our fruity Daphne.
Thanks, Daphne.
Yeah, thank you.
So before we get into it, how you doing?
I'm all right. Keeping busy.
Good.
That's about it.
That's good.
Nothing to talk about, really.
Hard to commit murder or go to jail.
True.
If you're busy, right?
And yeah.
And you know what they say about keeping busy, that you can't murder.
Oh, is that what they say?
I don't know exactly. Yeah, just made it up. Anyway, let's move on to the listener letter part of our show, shall
okay.
we? Where is that harp?
Well, hello, angels. Thank you.
What's in the bag, Ben?
Well, I wanted to say thank you to BreeMetal11 for your 5-star review. And I apologize
yeah.
if I screwed up your username, but
thanks,
I did
Bree.
Want to say thank you. Yeah.
Or maybe it's Bree Ahmed. I don't know.
Bree Ahmed. Yeah, I don't know. But thank you anyway. And if you have any questions or comments, please send them to FruitloopsPod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at
602-935-6294.
And we may feature it on a future episode. But if you don't want us to, just let us know and we won't.
That's right. So I have to apologize. A million apologize. We missed a Patreon shout
out. Oh, no. Oh, no.
And we are so, so sorry. We hope that you have still been enjoying the bonus content over there on the Patreon. And stay tuned because you'll be getting your merch very soon. But you didn't get your tune, and I just feel so bad for that. So Angela H, another Angela H. We have more than one Patreon with the name Angela
wow.
H. Yes. We apologize. We got mixed up. So please forgive us. And I hope you like this tune. Hurry, Wendy, she's waiting there for you. Gonna take me a lot not to part for you. There's nothing that 100 murderers could ever do. I missed a Patreon for Angela. I fucked the Patreon for Angela. I messed the Patreon for Angela. I messed it up. Gonna take some time to make it better. Ooh. Okay. Hip hop air horns. Oh my God.
That's really fun.
Thank you so much. Thanks, I hope you can Angela. Forgive us. And, you know, again, we have like hundreds of Patreons and we love you guys so much. If I have forgotten anybody, please forgive me.
Just let us know.
Yeah. And let me know. This is actually like my favorite part of the show. So let me know if I miss you. Let me get you back. So let's take a quick break and then we're going to get into the story when we come back. You know, there are so many amazing movies out right now.
Yeah.
Civil War, Godzilla versus King Kong, Monkey Man, Dune Part 2. Can I get a what, Beth? Deadpool versus Wolverine is also coming out this summer.
Oh, that looks amazing.
I know. And Kingdom of Planet of the Apes. I just can't wait.
And don't forget Furiosa.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So many great movies to see. And the best place to experience them is in the theater.
That is the truth. No lies detected. You can't handle the truth. Now, experience is the best way to put this whole movie thing. I mean, the memorable moments, the getting lost in the stories, the popcorn, the snacks, the drinks, the comfy seats, the company. It is an experience and a magical one at that.
I couldn't agree more. I love going to the movies.
Yeah.
And there's something so special about movies and seeing a film in the theater.
Yeah.
It doesn't compare to anything else, really.
Yeah. Again, no lies. And listen close, Fruit Loops, because we have an offer from Regal Unlimited that you cannot refuse. We're going to make them an offer that I can't refuse. Regal Cinemas.
That's right. Regal Unlimited is an all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass that pays for itself in just 2 visits.
Did you say it pays for itself? Oh my gosh, tell me more.
Yeah,
tell
yeah.
Tell me more, tell me more.
You can see any standard 2D movie anytime without any blockout dates or restrictions. And if you want to see a movie in a premium format like 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost.
With Regal Unlimited, you won't just save money on tickets. You'll also save on snacks.
Woo.
Members get 10% off all non-alcoholic concessions items.
So if you're planning to see 2 movies this month, you need to join Regal Unlimited. Sign up now in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Use promo code FLOOPSREG, that's FLOOPSREG, to let them know that Beth and Wendy sent you.
Again, go to the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited and use promo code FLOOPSREG.
Thanks, Regal Cinemas, for sponsoring the show.
Yay! We're back. Remind us, Beth, who is our subject today?
Our subject today is Willie Corey Godbolt, who killed 8 people in 2017 in rural Mississippi, and most of them were related to him.
Related to him. It happened basically in the span of one night and early morning, and he went to 3 houses, killed 8 people.
Right.
So we are going to move to the love and light section of our show. We want to say rest in power and peace and glory to the victims who had their lives cut very short. The victims are Deputy William Durr, who was 36 years old. Jordan Blackwell was 18 years old. Austin Edwards, 11 years old. Takara May, 35. Brenda May, 55. Barbara Mitchell was 56. Sheila Barrage was 46. And Farrell Barrage was 45. And other than the deputy, the rest of the victims were all family members, right?
Yeah.
All related to each other and the perp. Multiple families, multiple children, multiple loved ones, and an entire community suffered unimaginable loss in a really short time. And this is a really tragic case. So let's get into the setting, Beth. Take us there.
Well, the setting is Lincoln County, Mississippi. It's located on the Choctaw people's ancestral homeland. The county seat is Brookhaven, developed during the 19th century as a small but significant trading hub on the Bogachitta River in southern Mississippi.
So Brookhaven was first established as a trading post in Choctaw Territory by Samuel Jane, a 23-year-old storekeeper in 1818, and the year after Mississippi received statehood, he named it after his hometown in New York. At that time, Brookhaven was located in Lawrence County.
The Choctaw ceded the Brookhaven territory to the United States government in 1805. which, as we all know, was forced. It wasn't like they were like, here, take this.
Hey, yeah.
It's fine. It's yours
now. Guys. Yeah. Go see what develops over there in America, which is now a failed state.
In 1858, a railroad was constructed through Brookhaven, connecting it with Memphis to the north and New Orleans to the south. The lumber industry prospered through the railroad expansion.
In 1860, Lawrence County was home to approximately 3,700 enslaved Black people, who made up 40% of its 9,213 residents.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
So longleaf pine forests once covered over 90 million acres across the South, from eastern Texas to central Florida and north to southern Virginia.
Okay.
And the extraction of raw turpentine and tar from the southern longleaf pine, along with the manufacture of derivative products such as spirits of turpentine and rosin, is referred to as the naval stores industry.
Wait a minute. Spirits of turpentine and rosin?
Rosin, yeah.
Isn't that the thing that killed the little boy in Breaking Bad?
Did it?
Or am I thinking of resin? I don't know.
So rosin, the only thing I know you can use rosin for, well, two things.
You know
things.
What I'm thinking of? Ricin. Sorry.
Oh, ricin.
Sorry, getting my R words confused. Sorry. Sorry about that. Whoops. Okay,
so
moving
we
on.
Use rosin for
like violin strings.
Playing
or
violin.
Viola strings.
Yeah. I think also ballet dancers use it on the toes of their shoes.
Oh man, what don't you know? What is
there's a lot I don't know.
What is not in that brain? How do you keep so much stuff in there?
I don't know.
Wow. So this term originally referred to the organic compounds used in building and maintaining wooden sailing ships. The naval stores industry was once the largest industry in North Carolina, and what gave it the name, the Tar Heel State. Oh!
Yeah. So I assumed it came from
racism.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I'm like, I always thought it was racist. Like, what
the
hell?
Yeah, it has to be racist. I don't know what it means, but I'm sure it's racist. Yeah.
But so I did not know this.
Wow.
And so that's one thing I did not know, but now I know it.
Wow. Thanks, friend.
You're welcome. So I like finding all this information. I just find it fascinating.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I love these little nuggets.
Me too. But the industry was destroying the region's longleaf pine forests. And as early as the 1840s, a number of turpentine planters left coastal North Carolina and moved as far south as Alabama and Mississippi in search of new longleaf pine forests, sometimes forcing hundreds of enslaved workers to go with them.
Wow. I don't know if I'd call them workers. I would call them enslaved, like captives.
Yeah.
But it also kind of makes me think of all of the things that have been lost or destroyed, like natural things.
Oh, yeah.
At the hands of colonialism, imperialism, and greed.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know what a longleaf pine forest is, but I'm pretty sure there's no more around. I mean, where are they?
They're still there, but okay. Just not as much.
Okay. Sawmill communities and turpentine quote-unquote camps dotted the southeast and created the first pathways for settlement in the area, sometimes called the Turpentine Trail. In the 1840s and 50s, this migration of North Carolina turpentiners forced and otherwise to other southern states was a trickle.
But after the Civil War, it became a torrent. A large number of Black people who worked in the naval stores industry in North Carolina left the state and went south. Following the pines, they scattered across the southern states all the way from the Florida Panhandle to East Texas. Because that's where the work was.
That's where the work was. And, you know, if you were a newly emancipated Black person, you could get arrested and go back to bondage and forced labor if you didn't have a job. So
you want to get away and find a job. Yeah,
exactly. And there was also, we've talked about this before, violence against Black people in the South who were fleeing the violence.
Right.
Is that, you know, the white Southerners were like, no, you can't leave. You got to work. But anyway, story for another day. So Lincoln County was formed in 1870 during the brief period of Reconstruction. It only lasted about 7 years and was named after Abraham Lincoln. Brookhaven has served as the seat of Lincoln County since the county was established. Smaller communities in Lincoln County include Ruth, East Lincoln, Auburn, and Bogachita.
Bogachita is an unincorporated community located about 10 miles south of Brookhaven. It's very small and the only municipal hamlet in the state of Mississippi. A hamlet, if you didn't know, now you know, is a small settlement, smaller than a village.
Wow.
And the population hovers around 500 and it is majority Black.
And that's like current numbers.
I guess
in my head, I didn't realize that teeny tiny towns like this
exist
still
like that.
Existed. Yeah.
They do.
So interesting.
So you would have to know like lots of like all your neighbors if you lived in a
Everybody
place
Everybody
like
would know.
Yeah.
There's no secrets.
Yeah.
There's no hiding. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So the name Bogachita comes from a Choctaw phrase, which means large stream. The Bogachita River flows south past the community, then southeast into Louisiana, where it joins the Pearl River.
The local economy involved the lumber industry, and a lumber mill and cotton gin were located there. Lumber towns were places where Black musicians of the early jazz and blues era in the late 1800s and early 1900s could tour and find an audience, as well as work at the mills themselves.
Yes, and there were many lumber and turpentine camps throughout Louisiana, Arkansas, and Mississippi where jazz and blues artists performed. Jazz and blues pioneer Little Brother Montgomery found a home in Brookhaven for a time as he passed through sawmills. There's a rap group called Little Brother.
Oh, really?
And part of me wonders if they got their name from this.
From Little Brother Montgomery?
Little Brother Montgomery. Where are they from? Well, I can't find it. Let us know, Fruities.
After Reconstruction, starting in the 1890s, states throughout the South passed laws designed to prevent Black citizens from improving their status or achieving equality. These statutes, which together were known as Jim Crow, were in place and enforced until the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah, so if you think about it, the United States didn't really become a democracy, like a full-er democracy, until the 60s, right?
Yeah.
When there was, you know, a healthy body of people who could vote.
Yeah.
Jim Crow laws legalized racial segregation and affected almost every aspect of daily life, including hospitals, schools, parks, libraries, drinking fountains, restrooms, buses, trains, and restaurants. Imagine living and not having access to those things.
Yeah.
Like just.
Or having access, but not the same access. Like,
yeah. If you wanted to take a road trip, good luck. If you don't have your green book guide.
Yeah.
If you wanted to get a new outfit, good luck. You can't try on the clothes in the store. You know what I mean? It's just, it's wild.
It is wild.
Yeah.
So the state constitution was rewritten, adding felony disenfranchisement crimes and inducing voter suppression methods, such as literacy tests and poll taxes. These were all a part of the quote-unquote Mississippi Plan, a concerted effort by white leaders to nullify the Black vote.
Mm.
And by 1892, less than 6% of eligible Black men were registered to vote. And of course, women couldn't vote at all.
Women couldn't vote at all. But also, I mean, these are Black men who safely completed their voter registration.
Right.
You could die trying to register to vote if you were Black. So in the 1950s and 60s, Mississippi's racial violence and civil rights activism became national flashpoints. There were many, many acts of violence, but here are just a few. In 1955, political activist Lamar Smith was killed in Brookhaven. The same year, 14-year-old Emmett Till was kidnapped, dragged from his auntie's and uncle's home, and murdered near Money, Mississippi.
NAACP Field Secretary Medgar Evers was assassinated in Mississippi.
Oh.
Yeah. President John F. Kennedy called for a civil rights bill in the wake of Evers' murder and was assassinated months later.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That every person who has stood up for the rights of Black people has been killed?
Not every single person, but a great majority of them. Yeah.
You know, and it was funny. I was listening to somebody talk about that today on the Breakfast Club. There was a writer, he's a lawyer, talking about how, you know, we were really like, when Barack Obama was running, we were so excited, but like, come on, he's not going to win. And if he does win, they're going to assassinate him. That was a prevailing belief amongst black people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
I know.
And this Mississippi's history has a lot to do with why we had empirical evidence that that was a possibility.
Yeah.
The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was signed by President Lyndon B. Johnson. Every time I see Lyndon B. Johnson's name, I'm sorry. I know he liked to go poop with the door open and have people like
talk to people
and talk to people while he's governing, which is so crazy.
That's such a Trump thing to do.
So he signed the Civil Rights Act while he was on the toilet. Just kidding. No, he didn't. And
well, he might have been. I don't know.
So Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and the Council of Federated Organizations, a coalition of civil rights groups, led several large efforts to boost statewide voter education and registration, including the Freedom Summer of 1964.
Mississippi was chosen as the site of the Freedom Summer Project due to its historically low levels of African-American voter registration, meaning political change in favor of civil rights was slow to non-existent.
Because of the state's poll taxes and literacy tests designed to silence black voters, in 1962, less than 7% of the state's eligible black voters were registered to vote. To put that into context, that's 1% more than 1892.
Yeah, and that's male voters in 1892. So that's fucking nuts.
Yeah,
I saw that stat and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should be ashamed of that. And we should be ashamed of people who are continuing to try to keep that number small.
Yep. Yeah. A week after the Freedom Summer began, Ku Klux Klan members murdered local activist James Chaney, along with volunteers Michael Schwerner and Andrew Goodman, both from New York.
Today, Mississippi is one of 13 states that imposes a lifetime voting ban, even after the end of a felony sentence. So you did your time, but you still don't have any rights returned. In Mississippi, a single felony conviction for writing a bad check or shoplifting takes away your right to vote, which is wild because Mississippi is one of the poorest states in the 50 states of this United States.
Yeah.
And think of all the people who are writing bad checks, shoplifting just to get food in their bellies. And then they can't vote again.
Yeah.
So now let's get into the early life of Willie Corey Godbolt. Hit it, Beth.
Willie Corey Godbolt was born on May 1st, 1982. His family and friends called him Corey. He had at least three siblings, a sister and two brothers. He may have had more, but those are the only ones that I read about. His parents separated prior to his birth, and his father married the woman that he left his mother for.
Part of me wondered if his father, you know, his father obviously met at one point another woman and had another family, but if he had more outside children, because it's not, black people are not a monolith, but I come from a Venn diagram of diasporic black communities worldwide, and outside children is not unusual. So
now what's outside children? Like
outside children are when your daddy has kids by other women.
Women.
Yeah,
okay.
Sometimes
while
you know who they
something.
Are. Yeah. Sometimes
gotcha.
You don't. But
it's possible.
It's just it happens. I'm sure it happens in white communities, but I'm not white, so I don't know. Anyway, it has been reported that when Godbolt was a young man, he experienced some sort of sexual abuse. But we were unable to find out exactly what that was.
I want to take a moment to tell you about my podcast, Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage. In 1984, a woman named Phyllis Cottle was abducted in broad daylight, tortured, and left to die in a burning car in Akron, Ohio. At the time, I was a rookie reporter covering this horrific story. Since then, I've reported every kind of crime imaginable. I've been able to leave most of them at work, but not this one, the one that buried itself under my skin and stayed put. Phyllis Cottle was a badass woman, and I want to tell you her story. a production of Evergreen Podcasts and signature title of the Killer Podcast Network, you can find Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage wherever you get your podcasts. Discover more great true crime and paranormal programming at killerpodcast.com.
I'm an American vigilante. I have a question for you. What would you do if someone you cared about was abducted, taken from you? Would you call me? Would you care about how I got them back? Download American Vigilante now.
On November 15, 1999, when Corey was 17, his stepmother shot and killed his father, a police officer who had been violent towards her after she tried to leave him. She accused him of domestic violence, but the charges were dropped. That night in November, she shot him using his own police revolver, and then she pleaded guilty to manslaughter and burglary.
And she did go to prison for some time.
Okay.
And so that means that he didn't have his mother around for a period of time.
It's his stepmother.
His stepmother. Right, right. That's right. Thank you. So Godbolt began dating a woman named Sheena May around the year 2000. In the year 2000! And the couple married in about 2010, and they had two children, Micaiah and Corey, who they nicknamed Bubble and Buddy. That's beautiful. So cute.
That's cute. Yeah.
Yeah.
According to Sheena, Godbolt was physically abusive to her throughout their marriage, resulting in at least one trip to the hospital. Their daughter, Micaiah, corroborated this later in court testimony, stating that she saw her father hit her mother numerous times. She said that he was physically abusive towards her as well.
In 2005, Godbolt was charged with armed robbery and aggravated assault after he allegedly struck a man with a pistol and took his wallet, jewelry, and cash outside a Boguachito residence.
In 2013, he was charged with simple assault. In 2015, he was arrested for disorderly conduct / breach of peace and failure to comply with a request by a Lincoln County Sheriff's Office. That year, he was also arrested for driving with a suspended license, speeding, and no proof of insurance.
I mean, even if you were like somebody who got into this kind of trouble and wanted to pay all the fines associated with all these crimes, right? And all the time away from work, et cetera. Like, it's a losing game. I mean, the charges just keep piling up.
Right. Yeah.
So Godbolt was cited by police multiple times for making threats or assaulting his own family members and others. In November of 2015, Godbolt was convicted of sending death threats to his in-laws.
Mm.
They pressed charges against him multiple times. And in 2016, he was arrested for contempt of justice court and simple assault.
Also in 2016, while Micaiah was spending the night at her grandparents, Vincent and Barbara Mitchell's, in Boguachito, a male cousin touched her inappropriately. Vincent witnessed the event and removed the cousin immediately.
So Godbolt wanted to press charges against the cousin and against Barbara and Vincent for failure to prevent it, but Sheena refused. Godbolt later had a discussion with the cousin about the incident, after which the cousin was permitted to fraternize with the family and Micaiah, and the issue was never raised again. And how often have we seen that happen in families?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then it blows up at some event where there's alcohol involved.
Or right.
Something, yeah. If tempers flare and, well, it never goes well. That's why we shouldn't sweep things under the rug. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So let's get into the timeline. What the what, Beth?
In the spring of 2017, Godbolt and Sheena separated. Sheena took their two children to stay with her mother and stepfather, Barbara and Vincent Mitchell, in Boguachito, a small community with a population of less than 500 people.
Like we said.
Yep.
And according to Micaiah, she was staying with her father on May 26th, 2017, when she saw guns in his car and on his bed, which was unusual. The next day, on May 27th, she saw her father watching quote-unquote gun videos showing how to shoot guns and how to reload them. Dad,
yeah,
I think
what
my the dad's
fuck?
Gone crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember that Eminem song?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Later that same day, Goldbot told his two children that, quote, he would die or kill before he let them stay with anybody else, unquote.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Godbolt dropped Micaiah and Corey off at their grandparents' house later that afternoon.
So something's a brewing.
Yeah.
And it was Saturday, and it was Memorial Day weekend. So their grandparents, Vincent and Barbara Mitchell, were hosting a family barbecue. Ooh, a cookout. Oh, I'm wishing we knew what was on the menu. Anyway, present were Sheena, Micaiah, and Corey, Sheena's sister Tokara May, and her children, Barbara's sister Brenda May, and a few other people. Barbara Mitchell was 4 days past a triple bypass heart surgery and was resting on the couch.
I guess I should say that Micaiah and Corey Jr. So oh, it wasn't
yeah,
Godbolt.
It wasn't the
it was
dad.
His
yeah,
son.
It was his
yeah,
son. Yeah. Who was 11. Is that right? How old was he?
I'm not sure how old he was at this time.
Oh, okay.
Not sure. Later in the evening, Godbolt texted Sheena and told her that he was coming back to pick up the children. In the text exchange, Godbolt expressed how much he loved his family and how he wanted it to remain intact.
Sheena responded that she no longer wanted to be with Godbolt because he had hurt her. She told him that she would call the police if he came back to the house. Despite this warning, Godbolt returned to pick up his children.
When her sister told her that Godbolt had arrived and was outside the home, Sheena sent her two children to stay in a back bedroom and called 911. Godbolt walked in through the back door uninvited and came through the kitchen, telling Sheena's mother, quote, it was time for them to listen, unquote. He then got into an argument with Sheena and her parents.
Listen to what? You scream and shout?
Yeah. And be an asshole?
Yeah. So the initial 911 call seemed run-of-the-mill when it came in at about 11:30 Saturday night. Lincoln County Sheriff's Deputy William Durr was the first to respond, with a second officer, Deputy Timothy Keyes, following a few minutes behind.
36-year-old Deputy Durr was married and had an 11-year-old son. Before Durr became a police officer, he was involved with youth groups and worked as a mental health technician. He also served as a youth minister for several churches. He enjoyed puppetry and said that he loved making children smile with puppets. He did shows at children's churches, elementary schools, and daycares.
So I think this is unusual for us to know this much about a police officer qualifications.
Yeah.
And I know he is a victim in the case. I also wanted to point out how, as far as law enforcement being equipped enough to handle domestic disputes and intimate partner violence situations, it sounds like this guy, Deputy Durr, has got all the right stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Which makes it even more devastating.
Yeah.
So Deputy Durr asked Godbolt to leave, and Godbolt looked as if he were about to comply. But then he reached into his back pocket and pulled out a hidden .40 caliber handgun and shot Deputy Durr in the face, killing him. I don't know if it's still true, but at that time, Deputy Durr was the only Lincoln County Sheriff's deputy ever killed in the line of duty. Wow.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this was a really unusual situation, I would say.
For the community. It's a small community. Everybody knows everybody. Disputes don't need to be solved like this when we know each other, right? Like,
right.
If I know you like that, I don't need any guns to work it out with you in my head.
So Deputy Durr fell to the ground and everyone else scattered. Godbolt began to shoot at the other family members in the house, killing three more people. Sheena's 56-year-old mother, Barbara Mitchell, Barbara's daughter and Sheena's sister, Tokara May, 35, and Barbara's sister, Brenda May, 55. Sheena escaped through a window with her two children.
Deputy Timothy Keyes, a close friend of Durr's, had just arrived on the scene when he heard the shots. By the time he approached the home, Godbolt was waiting, now with a rifle. He fired on Keyes, but after Keyes fired back at him, Godbolt retreated into the home.
While Keyes was retreating back to his squad car, he lost sight of Godbolt. Godbolt fled the home on foot and ran into the surrounding woods. Believing that Godbolt was still inside the home, the scene was treated as having, quote, an armed, barricaded subject, unquote. After a few hours on the scene, however, the officers became aware that Godbolt was no longer there.
That evening, the Mitchells' neighbor, LaPetra Stafford, was at home cooking a meal to take to church the next day. Godbolt, whom she had known for years, knocked at her door. She opened the door. Godbolt pushed into the home with two assault rifles under his arm. Godbolt told her, quote, "I done fucked up. I done shot the police," unquote.
He told her he killed a deputy and demanded that she take him for a drive. LaPetra's three children were asleep in bed, so she tried to give him her keys to take her car. But he demanded that she drive and promised not to hurt her.
LaPetra drove Godbolt to several places as he sat behind her with his guns, and she feared for her life. But she also pleaded with him to give himself up. She drove Godbolt from Bogachita to another small town, Magnolia, and back again.
When Godbolt was in her car, he used her phone to call his sister, Shelley. Godbolt told her, quote, "Baby girl, I fucked up. I shot an officer and Faye and Brenda," unquote, referring to his mother-in-law, Barbara Mitchell, and her sister, Brenda May. He asked Shelley to get in touch with one of their cousins, who is also a sheriff's deputy.
I also have talked about this on the show before, how it's Black people's, and again, Black people are not a monolith, but often the instinct is not to call law enforcement first.
No,
right?
Yeah.
They're calling everybody else. Yes. Yeah, family members. So Godbolt told that deputy that he was still in the house in Bogachita, even though at the time he was sitting in LaPetra's vehicle behind a hotel. After the call ended, Godbolt told LaPetra that he had time because, quote, "They think I'm in the house," unquote.
At his direction, LaPetra then drove Godbolt to the home of Marvin Brumfield, one of his longtime friends. Godbolt, LaPetra, and Marvin sat down and talked for a while. Godbolt spoke about how he was tired of people interfering in his marriage. Marvin also tried to get Godbolt to surrender to the police.
Again, you know, the family's like, come on, let's do the right thing here. Come on. So Godbolt, LaPetra, and Marvin then got into LaPetra's car, and she thought he was going to turn himself in. Instead, he directed her to drive him to Sean and Tiffany Blackwell's home in Brookhaven. Tiffany Blackwell was Sheena's close friend, and Sean Blackwell was Godbolt's second cousin. Godbolt told LaPetra and Marvin that he wanted to talk to Sean.
The Blackwells had also been celebrating the Memorial Day holiday that day at a park in Brookhaven with friends and other family members. Later on in the day, Sean, Tiffany, and their three children and several other friends and family members had returned to the Blackwell home to play games.
Doesn't it sound like just a fun Memorial Day weekend?
Yeah.
A nice day. That evening, Tiffany received a phone call from Sheena telling her what had happened and asking Tiffany to come pick her up. Sean and Tiffany, along with Tiffany's sister, Shayla Edwards, and their friend Kimberly Lilly, left immediately for the Mitchell house in Bogachita, leaving their children at home.
Caleb Edwards, 15, said he and some other young people were playing video games when a little after midnight, Godbolt burst into the Blackwell home. He had fired rounds into the door's lock until he successfully kicked in the door. Meanwhile, LaPetra took off in her vehicle and called 911.
Inside the house, Godbolt demanded to know where Sean and Tiffany were. Their son, Jordan Blackwell, 18, said they had gone to Bogachita. At that, Godbolt started shooting.
As the kids scrambled to hide inside the home, Jordan Blackwell used his own body to shield his cousin Caleb from the gunfire.
Oh.
Either shrapnel or a bullet grazed Caleb's head, but he survived. However, Caleb's 11-year-old brother, Austin Edwards, did not.
That hurt my heart. That is, I don't even know what to say. So Tiffany Blackwell rushed back home when she heard of the shootings to find her 18-year-old son, Jordan, and her 11-year-old nephew, Austin, dead. Godbolt messaged her, quote, "Payback, bitch. Fuck up my family. Now it's yours, ho," unquote. Oh, my God.
I know. Yeah. Horrible. Ugh. Like, how could you?
What a piece of basura.
Yeah,
wow.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Godbolt then kidnapped one of the kids at the Blackwell house, 16-year-old Xavier Lilly, and forced the teenager to drive him around for the next 4 hours. During that time, Godbolt held up Henry and Alfred Bracey, stole their vehicle, then had Xavier drive it to his aunt's house, where he stole another vehicle.
Wow.
So he's changing cars so that they won't catch him.
Okay.
At least that's my read on it.
That's my read too, but did he forget he's in a town of less than 500
people? 500 people.
They're going to know. They're going to know. They're going to know. What is he doing? Oh, that's so maddening. Because that's another aspect of this. Like, he's thinking, I don't know what he's thinking, but like, everybody already knows. Everybody's going to know, and you're going to get caught. So finally, Godbolt had Xavier drive him to the home of married couple Farrell and Sheila Burrage in Brookhaven. Once there, he then allowed Xavier to drive away. The Burrages were related to and close family friends of Godbolt and Sheena.
Farrell and Sheila Burrage, along with Sheila's sister Shonda May and Shonda's daughter, got home from the crime scene in Boca Chica a little before 6 a.m. Shonda May had been at the Mitchell's barbecue, but had left to go to the store when she got a call that Godbolt had showed up at the house and then shot her family members.
That's, I mean, the news.
She survived that one.
Yeah.
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 And then she comes home, and then this shit happens. Yeah.
Yeah. At the Burrage house in Brookhaven, Shonda was on the phone in the kitchen when she heard a knock at the door. "Who is it?" Farrell asked. "Me," came the answer. Shonda assumed it was her nephew. "Who's me?" Farrell asked. "Me," repeated the visitor. Farrell went to peek out the window to see who it was when Shonda heard the pop-pop of a gun firing.
The family scattered. As Godbolt walked into the home, Farrell was able to fire off 4 shots. One of them hit Godbolt in the arm. Godbolt then shot Farrell multiple times, killing him.
Godbolt then went to the bedroom where Sheila Burrage had locked herself in the bathroom. He blasted several shots at the locked door until he could kick it open. At that point, he shot Sheila multiple times, killing her as well.
Shonda was hiding in a closet. She could hear Godbolt walking around the house, and she was texting family members begging for help. Godbolt finally left the house, running down the road on foot.
So this is a horrific
horrifying
scene.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrifying and terrifying for the people who were enduring it.
Introduce you to Barry Clue, an authorised financial advisor from New Zealand and a very special kind of stain on humanity.
He was a very knowledgeable young guy.
He was a registered financial advisor.
Type of guy that was bending over backwards to help you.
Now, you could be forgiven for thinking that Barry sounds like a great guy, and you'd be right. Well, right up until the point when you're wrong.
It was all fictitious.
You stole from my son, who has a disability.
Chris never knew. He died believing that we're all taken care of.
A psychopath is somebody who lacks empathy, acts impulsively. I think there's a strong case that Barry might be all of those things, actually.
To find out how Barry Clue stole over $15 million from 81 victims, subscribe to Clueless, The Long Con. That's Clueless, spelt K-L-O-O-G-H-L-E-S-S.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweitz, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery. And I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.
And now let's get into the investigation and the arrest. So a little before 7 a.m. on Sunday, May 28th, Godbolt was found standing on the side of East Lincoln Road in Brookhaven, unarmed and bleeding from the bullet fired by Faral Burage. He was arrested.
While sitting on the pavement with his hands handcuffed behind his back and his right arm bandaged, a local reporter asked Godbolt why he did it. He responded, quote, "Because I love my wife and I love my children," unquote. Okay, that's not
how love works. No. And do you know what's really weird? So, because in light of the demise of Orenthal James Simpson, I went back and watched that documentary. He said the same thing.
He said the same thing? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Back to the story. So he also said, Godbolt said, quote, "I was having a conversation with her stepdaddy and her mama and her, my wife, about taking my children home. Somebody called the officer, people that didn't even live at our house. That's what they do. They intervene. They cost him his life. I'm sorry," unquote.
Oh, jeez. Godbolt told a reporter that death is next, saying, quote, "My intentions was to have God kill me. I ran out of bullets. Suicide by cop was my intention. I ain't fit to live, not after what I've done, not in your eyes, not in nobody else's eyes. But God, you know, he forgives you for everything," unquote. Fuck this guy.
I'm going to get into it in my takes, but this guy is just... Oh, boy. So Godbolt was then transported to a local hospital to be treated for a gunshot wound to the arm. Aside from Deputy Durr, everyone else that was murdered was somehow related to him. So now let's get into the trial. What the what, Beth? What the what?
What the what?
What the
fuck?
What? What the fuck?
Godbolt was indicted on 12 counts, 4 counts of capital murder, 4 counts of first-degree murder, 2 counts of kidnapping, 1 count of attempted murder, and 1 count of armed robbery.
Godbolt's trial took place from February 15th to the 27th, and it took place in 2020, just before the lockdown.
Just before the pandemic. Yeah.
And because of pretrial publicity in South Mississippi, jury selection was conducted in North Mississippi's DeSoto County, 285 miles north of Lincoln County. The trial took place in Magnolia in Pike County, about 33 miles south of Brookhaven.
So that's crazy. So once they selected the jury, then the jurors had to go all the way down to Magnolia for the trial? That's nuts.
Yeah, completely. I would say, take me to jail, Judge. I can't go that far for jury duty.
Godbolt's defense was that he didn't want Micaiah to stay at the Mitchells because of the incident when she had been touched inappropriately by her cousin. His attorney alleged that he just snapped.
Ugh, I hate that defense. So it was reported that when his 12-year-old daughter testified, he stared her down. Oof.
So he cares so much about her.
Yeah, but gosh, what a brave little girl. What a shout out to that young queen.
For sure. 12
well
years
done.
Old.
Yeah. Yeah. Could not have been easy to do
easy. No,
the right
not
thing
at all.
In this context. So I'm proud of her.
For mitigation evidence, the defense introduced the testimony of Godbolt's former teacher, his aunt, two of his siblings, Chris and Shelley, his pastor, and an expert clinical psychologist.
Through their testimony, the defense developed themes of 3 traumatic events that occurred in Godbolt's life. These events were the separation of his parents prior to his birth, and his father's subsequent remarriage, and his father's murder perpetrated by his stepmother, and an occurrence of sexual abuse that happened to Godbolt when he was a young man.
Godbolt addressed the jury with the judge's permission and spoke for 15 minutes in an effort to explain his side of the story. He said, quote, "What came from that night was not the fruit of my heart, but of my perception. I didn't have a plan," unquote.
He was found guilty on all 12 counts. During the sentencing, Godbolt spoke in court. He rambled on and on about how the devil made him do it, all kinds of other nonsense. He even went as far as to quote Jesus himself and said,
Jesus
quote,
Christ.
My Lord, why hast thou forsaken me? And he used hast and he used thou.
Oh, my
unquote.
God. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What a narcissist.
Yeah.
At which point a family member screamed and said, quote, "Corey, just shut up. Just stop," unquote.
I mean,
good for them.
Yes.
Yeah, just shut the fuck up,
you
asshole.
We don't need to hear anything else from you, sir.
Yeah. Jurors heard from the victim's relatives and the deputy's widow.
For each of his capital murder convictions, the jury sentenced Godbolt to death. For his other convictions, Godbolt was sentenced to 6 life sentences. and 2 20-year terms. So let's get into where are they now? Tell us, Beth.
Sheena divorced Godbolt, changed her and her two children's names, and moved to a community where no one knew them before.
Good.
Yeah.
Godbolt appealed and took his death penalty case all the way to the Mississippi Supreme Court. There, his public defenders argued that the conviction should be overturned due to bad evidence and that there should have been separate trials.
Separate trials for each murder?
For each murder and yeah. for each scene.
Oh my God.
Each crime scene. Can you imagine what that would have done to the community, to the victims? That would have been
ridiculous.
Awful. Yeah.
But on March 8th, 2024, so just this year, the Mississippi Supreme Court affirmed the 8 murder convictions and the death sentences. Godbolt is currently being housed at the Mississippi State Penitentiary in Parchman.
Yes. And by the way, people who don't know about Parchman, it's a horrendous detention facility.
I read that it's called Parchman Farm, so I'm assuming it has some history as a
farm. It used to be a plantation. Yeah, not a farm, necessarily. A plantation.
I was imagining the forced labor of convicts.
Yeah. It was that was it. And it got so bad during the pandemic, like inmates were lighting their mattresses on fire to try to get medical attention.
Oh my God.
There's floods, there's rats, there's sickness. They can't
get that. So he's just where he should be.
He's not in a great place. Yeah. I mean, it's not like he is at the Club Med. So,
yeah.
So now let's get into what we think brought all this about in our takes. What are your thoughts, Beth?
Well, I mean, it goes without saying that he lost it.
He did, but that makes me so mad because men just get to lose it. And like, oops, well, I killed somebody. And
also,
that makes me so mad.
Also, you know, okay, so he snapped. I can see somebody snapping and killing one person, but to go on this killing spree, that is a sustained. I mean, he didn't get caught until like 6 o'clock in the morning the next day, something like that. So
yeah. And he was running on foot, right?
Yeah. But he was switching cars and kidnapping people and driving all over the place. So, I don't think you can say that he just snapped.
Yeah, I agree.
He lost it. Mm-hmm. He went on a rampage. Mm-hmm. What preceded that was, I think, his realization that Sheena was not ever coming back.
Yeah.
And he lost control. I mean, it was mentioned that his father was abusive.
Yeah.
I'm sure that had something to do with him being controlling and abusive, too.
I agree. Yeah.
And it was the loss of control. Abusive men use abuse as a way to control their families, but it's a short-term solution. Eventually, their family wants nothing to do with them. I mean, even if they do have control over their family and like where they go and what they do and stuff like that, their family isn't going to love them.
That's not how love is supposed to.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Love shouldn't be like scary or terrifying or like.
Or controlling.
Yeah. Great point, OG of true crime. She does it again.
And I'm pretty sure that this guy is a narcissist. And it makes me sick.
Yeah.
This story made me really sick.
Yeah. So I thought of something today. It came to my mind when I heard somebody talking about the lead in the paint of housing structures.
Oh, wow.
Back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, 80s, if the place hadn't been redone, where mostly black and brown people and children were raised at around the time Godbolt was a kid.
Up.
And so part of me wondered after hearing that, like, was it the lead poisoning that contributed to his even more toxic black masculinity in particular? Because it was a sustained rage.
Like that.
Can lead do that? Yeah. Can
I don't
because
know.
Because I know lead affects cognition, right? It affects like it's your physical environment, but you know, there's no amount of safe lead, right? Like it's all bad and it fucks up your brain and your central nervous system, all things that we need to regulate our bodies and our emotions. And this is not an excuse or anything like that, but I thought it could be a partial explanation.
Okay, so I just Googled it. I Googled, what does lead do to a child's brain?
Mm-hmm.
and I got intellectual disability, behavior disorders, reduced IQ, reduced attention span, increased antisocial behavior, a bunch of other stuff. But I thought that was really interesting.
Thank you so much, Foodies. Let me know what you think, because environment is part of the context. And I wonder, you know, but he also had siblings and they didn't kill anybody. So
true.
But just maybe it was a factor. Also, obviously, his motive was he didn't want to lose his family. But who's like, I don't want to lose my family. Aha!
I'll kill everybody.
Yeah. What? I don't understand. I don't understand. Love is not violent.
I think it's not. It wasn't love. But I think he was like, I'm going to lose my family. I can't do anything to stop it. So I'm going to fuck everything up.
Yeah.
I'm just going to kill people.
Just going to burn it all down. I'm going to burn it all down.
Yeah.
And then I think he also hoped that the police would kill him because, you know, at the time and still to this day, police do that. They do that a lot.
They kill
1,300 people a day.
I'm surprised they didn't.
I am too. I really am too, because he also killed a police officer.
A police officer. Yeah.
So I'm
and
surprised.
And a white police officer.
I know. This story has a lot of things that just really surprised me. And I also wanted to say his stepmother said she shot his father because he was abusive towards her.
Right.
And obviously, his childhood was pretty violent. There was a forensic psychologist or a clinical psychologist who testified at his trial that his stepmom shot and killed his dad, and that led him to be very, very angry, very, very resentful, especially towards women.
Okay.
And the loss of his family at the hands of this woman, i.e. his ex-partner, he just couldn't take it.
Right.
And I was also going to say, stepmoms don't just wake up one day and shoot dads. Like, This wasn't just a one-time thing. This probably was violence going on for a long time. And then I also imagined that his parents, his family grew up in the Deep South, the segregated South. And imagine, okay, so this happened in 2017, but imagine the generation before him or the generation that came before him, right? His parents and his grandparents and his grandparents, those people who existed in the period of American chattel slavery and, you know, the Civil War and the Black Codes and Jim Crow, that generational trauma doesn't go away if somebody doesn't take the choice or make the choice to say, it ends with me. This cycle of violence, this cycle of pain ends with me. And so I just, like, part of me was looking into this and thinking, like, man, what if he had just made a choice to do something different? Because he had kids, he had an opportunity, right, to do different and do better. And he didn't.
He didn't. Yeah.
It's toxic masculinity, I think, is also a factor here. But specifically Black toxic masculinity, because Black men, in my eyes, haven't really been allowed to be full Black men basically since the 60s.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to sound patronizing, but they haven't had the opportunity to do it right and do it well in the context of America for that long.
Yeah.
So that was just where my brain went. Let me know what you guys think. What do the Fruities think? I feel like my thoughts went on for so long. So let's move on to the next section. How not to get murdered. If you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you. A little breathy, a little soft. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. What if you just go, a-dooba-dooba-doo.
A-dooba-dooba-doo.
How not to get murdered, a-dooba-dooba-doo. Yeah.
This segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. This is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's experiences.
All right. It looks like you've got a real humdinger, a useful, helpful humdinger, Beth. What is it?
So I stumbled across this in my research on this story.
Mm-hmm.
There is an act that has been submitted, but it hasn't gone through the whole thing yet. Whatever that is.
I'm just a bill. Yes, exactly. I'm only a bill.
Yeah. And it's been submitted, but it's sitting there right now.
Okay.
It's called the Rise from Trauma Act.
Ooh.
And it's to increase support for children who have been exposed to adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, and trauma including witnessing community violence, parental addiction, or abuse. And one of the reasons why I like to talk about these stories is to talk about childhood trauma and how it affects, like, not only the perpetrators, but the victims, you know? So read about the Rise from Trauma Act and what you can do to help. And I'll put the link in our show notes, but it's under policy.futureswithoutviolence.org/resource-center/Rise from Trauma Act. But it'll be in the show notes.
Wonderful. Oh, I love this. This feels like what we've talked about for years.
Yeah.
Getting to the root, the root gut of the problem, right? Like, this doesn't need police. Let's go back to the people and give them what they
can
need
to help. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. Thanks, Beth. So, support the Rise from Trauma Act, y'all. And let's go to our shout out section of our show where we shout out any content by or about people of color or by or about marginalized folks or any true crime goodies.
Okay, what you got?
Wait a minute.
You don't got anything?
Wait a minute. I didn't get to fill. I forgot to fill in this part of the show. Okay, forget it. Just what do you got? I'm like, I can't believe I missed
you forgot.
It.
Forgot.
Go ahead. What do you got?
I wanted to shout out The Sympathizer on Max.
Okay. Okay.
It's a historical comedy drama miniseries about a Vietnamese captain who is a North Vietnam plant in the South Vietnam Army. So he's a spy.
Okay.
He's forced to flee to the United States with his general near the end of the Vietnam War. And while living in the United States within a community of South Vietnamese refugees, he continues to secretly spy on the community and report back to the Viet Cong. And
So he's not a spy for the Americans.
No, he's a spy for the North.
Perfect.
For North Vietnam.
Okay, good, good.
And I don't know what's going to happen because I've only seen two episodes so far. And it's, I have to say, it's really weird, but it's really good.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that. This case made me think of a documentary I saw recently. I don't think I've shouted it out yet. It's called Exposing Parchman. And it's about Parchman Prison, perp is housed right now. And it's a really, really great documentary. It's really hard to watch, but it's on Hulu, Amazon Prime, Philo. You can get it. You can stream it anywhere for a couple bucks, couple of dollars.
All right.
So to recap, that is The Sympathizer on Max, which sounds amazing. And Exposing Parchman, the documentary on Hulu.
All right.
Oh my, look at that.
We're here.
What? How did we get here? This is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife. My God. I love that song. Anyway, that's it for now, Beth. In the meantime, where can the people find us?
Our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all of our social media. The footnotes for each episode can be found on our website. Plus, check it out for the different ways that you can support the show. Also, join us on Patreon, where we have literally hundreds of hours of bonus content.
So many.
Yeah. You can also support us by supporting our sponsors or by giving us a 5-star review.
Five stars only, please.
Also, don't forget to subscribe.
That's right. All true things that Beth has said. And this is a weekly podcast and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there. Okay. A quick tea sip, if you don't mind.
I do not mind.
It really, you know, it's like half water and half honey. Like, there could be tea bags in there, but I don't really taste them. I really just taste the honey. It's like honey water.
Honey water.
Godbolt.
Godbolt. Yes.
You know, people with God in their name, I wonder if they have
it's
complexes.
Not right.
It is. It does have me shaking my head quite a bit, but let's get into it.
Okay.
Okay. Hey,
start. Do it again.
Okay. I'm going to read it again. It okay, doesn't
does
look.
It make sense
it
to you?
It looks weird to me. I did it again. Oh, Jesus. Goldbort. Jesus. Sorry.
When I was researching this story, I kept thinking Goldbolt. I don't know why.
Me too.
Yeah.
Because it is unnatural to have God in
God
your name.
In your name.
Did he forget he's in a town of less than 500
people? 500
people. They're going to know. They're going to know. They're going to know. What is he doing? What the what?
What the what? What
the
fuck?
What? What the fuck?
That's such a Trump thing to do.
So he signed the Civil Rights Act while he was on the toilet. Just kidding. They did it. And
well, he might have been. I don't know.
And you know what they say about keeping busy? That you can't murder.
Oh, is that what they say?
I don't know exactly. Yeah, just ended up. Anyway, let's move on. And 22-year terms.
Two 22-year terms.
That is a tongue twister.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense either. I mean, it does, but not normally.
Two terms of 22 years each.
No. Two terms of 20 years each.
What? Okay.
Two. So there was a 20 year term and then another 20 year term.
I can't wait for the blooper reel of this. Okay. Two. I'm going to say it. Man, what don't you know? What is
there's a lot I don't know.
What is not in that brain? How do you keep so much stuff in there?
I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, we did it.
We did it.
Oh, man. I got a stomach cramp.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's okay. I should drink more water. I've been trying to. You're not going to believe this, Beth. I'm going on vacation.
What?
Yeah. My family basically shamed.
Sorry, I had to sneeze. They shamed you?
Into going on vacation? Yeah. It doesn't sound great, but I'm doing it. So,
Well, have fun. I know you went to a KOA once last year, and it sounds like you guys had a lot
of
fun there.
That was pretty rad.
So I hope it's like that.
Thanks, friend. Oh, my gosh. You're so wonderful. Okay, so I'm going to go to sleep.
All right.
And hopefully the internet's not too slow. I'll get it in tonight. If not, tomorrow morning. I hope that's okay.
Sounds good.
Okay, good night. All right. Love you. Bye.
Love you too. Bye.
Did you guys hear about that couple that went on vacation and one spouse murdered the other? In fact, the entire vacation was planned just so that they could make the murder look like an accident.
Ah, so like a slaycation.
Oh boy, sounds like a fun new true crime podcast to me.
On every episode of Slaycation, we'll examine true cases of people who were killed while on vacation.
Was it murder? Or just a horrible accident? That's up to you and the law to decide.
But either way, if you leave for your vacation in the plane and come home under the plane, you've definitely gone on a slaycation.
Join us every week for a fascinating new episode.
911, what's your emergency?
But make sure to pack your body bags,
because getting away can be murder.
This is Slaycation.
Four hours ago, I found out the person that I'd been dating and seeing for the last 6 months as a con man.
That is my sister Emma,
Andrew Tonks's lies had been so convincing, she'd invested $300,000 with him. However, the tables were about to turn on Andrew. What he didn't know was that Emma had discovered his real identity. But to get any chance of justice, Emma had to act like it was business as usual. Coming up in this series...
And that's when murder, all this stuff goes through my mind. I'm really, really scared.
I'm assuming Sarah has watched too much Netflix and figures I've been defrauding you. Couldn't be further from the truth.
That's what this was, a real-life story that seems so unbelievable, but it was actually true.
A true story that all starts with one simple swipe to the right. I'm Sarah Ferris.
And I'm Emma Ferris, and this is my story, Conning the Con.